Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Not many actors can say that they've played such iconic characters as Luke Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Chewbacca, Lando Calrissian, and even Princess Leia. Charlie Ross has been doing exactly that for more than a decade, and often in the very same breath. Not to mention special effects and his own stunts. Better known as One Man Star Wars, Ross has performed an engrossing, irreverent, and hilarious version of Star Wars as a one-man show since 2002.
I'm Luke Skywalker, I'm here to rescue. You're who? I'm Luke Skywalker! I'm here for Arjun! I'm here for Ben Kenobi! Ben Kenobi! Where is he? Come on!
He is here.
Obi-Wan Kenobi? If it is Kenobi, he must not be allowed to escape.
Escape is not his plan. I must face him alone.
Get behind me! This is some rescue. You got any hint of a plan for getting out? Well, he's the brain, sweetheart. What the hell are you doing? Some must save us, kids. In the garbage you fly, boy. Get in there, you big Leo. I don't care what you smell. Get him! Wonderful girl. I'm going to kill her and begin to like her. Get in there. The garbage chute. What a wonderful idea.
Officially sanctioned by Lucasfilm, Ross has made the Kessel Run around the world, getting rave reviews on 12 systems. Having seen his show the last time it was in the area in 2009, I can attest, only stormtroopers are so precise. Ross, who also performs a one-man Lord of the Rings trilogy, will offer his take on George Lucas's classic tale of good versus evil during a run of 5 shows, January 25th through 27th, at Proctor's in Schenectady. Charlie Ross, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Roundtable.
Thanks for having me.
How has the show changed in the decade you've been doing it?
Well, I guess because the new films came out, that sort of informed some new jokes just to do with some of the lies that Obi-Wan Kenobi told to Luke Skywalker. I guess there's also things that change when I go from one country to another. For instance, would be something as silly as the word "but" in America, meaning the derriere, would be "bum" in places like, well, Canada or the UK or Australia. Little things like that change. And I guess because the environment's always changing, I tend to just sort of tailor-make it to the particular audience of that particular night.
Is the reaction different in different places? Because we should say that your show it's very highly comical, but are the jokes in different places?
I wouldn't say they're in different places. It's weird what people will laugh at in one place or another. It's also weird what people have noticed in one place or another. When I performed in Singapore, I was worried that people wouldn't be able to keep up with the pace of the show, but it turns out that they can absolutely do it. Whereas I've been to places in extremely rural Ireland, and I really had to slow the show down. I think I had to slow it down because of my Canadian accent, trying to do an American accent. Sometimes the jokes themselves get a little bit lost in translation, but I never seem to know how things are going to turn out until I'm sort of there, in the frying pan, as it were.
You know, in jokes about Star Wars in recent years have become like a cottage industry. You think about Family Guy and Robot Chicken doing entire episodes about Star Wars, but you were sort of ahead of the curve on this, weren't you?
I guess so, yeah. Not meaning to. I mean, there were things like Hardware Wars and Thumb Wars, which kind of came out before I ever did. There was also another show, which is a 30-minute Star Wars. I had no idea that it even existed until I started to do this. And it had come out many years before I did. And it was, once again, George Lucas actually saw this show, but it was a large cast of people, and they tried to reduce Star Wars down to a half an hour. It was interesting to find out about them, because I believe for them to be able to tour, as I do, would be very, very cost prohibitive, because there was 14 people in the cast, whereas myself, and they also had props and sets. Myself, as you know, I don't have any costume or set or props or talent or it's just myself, and that makes it extremely portable. I guess in a way, being able to go to things like big Star Wars conventions, it puts me into this different realm where I'm not quite on television, but I'm, you know, not necessarily just something that's written. I'm somewhere in between. I'm this bizarre living, breathing action figure that George Lucas gives his thumb up to. So I don't really know what the heck I am. I'm some kind of strange mutation between the extreme fan and, I guess an entertainer.
Is there any indication that relationship you have will change on the news that Lucasfilm's being handed over to Disney?
I don't think so, and we can hardly say they're being handed over to Disney. They're being relinquished for $4.05 billion.
Yeah. Well said. Well said.
But I mean, yes, I guess it's being handed over, and I guess I'm sort of part of what's being handed over. Maybe I'm part of the big toy box. I'm not really sure. I'm excited to see what happens. Who knows? Maybe I won't exist anymore. Maybe there'll be legions of one-man Star Wars, you know, people working at the big parks. I don't really know. I've never known where things are going to go with this show. It's been as much of an adventure as you could imagine. So I guess I'm kind of excited, maybe a little bit trepidatious, but I've heard nothing yet. I'm certainly not on the inside track, other than the fact that Lucasfilm still runs and functions as their own company. In a sense, I think Disney perhaps right now are just going with the whole idea of what isn't broken, you know, there's no point in fixing it. But perhaps later they'll be able to discover that they can streamline things for themselves if they make their own T-shirts or they make their own toys or they, have guys like me doing the one-man Star Wars show at the theme parks and being able to do it 7 times a day. But as soon as I know, I will absolutely be sure to let the world know.
You know, few people know the universe the way you do because of the way the show is constructed. You're everything. You're aware of the inconsistencies in the text. Mm. You're able to get into different characters and sort of display their flaws. How do we get you into a walk-on in the next Star Wars movie, you know, as an actual a character or a stormtrooper or something? I mean, you've graduated, right?
I don't believe I'll ever have an opportunity to do that, simply because I fill up one small part of the Star Wars universe, and that is the part that I think I'm allowed to fill. It's even like do you remember that the person who was called the Star Wars kid? He had done a video for a class and then eventually became kind of bullied and became a bit of an internet star because of that bullying. There had been a bit of a push for him to have a small role in the last Star Wars film, The Revenge of the Sith. That didn't come to light, simply because I think there's a lot of problems in doing something like that. Suddenly the kid in the film would overshadow the film itself. Of the people that I've met who have been in the films, a lot of them I wouldn't even call fans of the film. They're people that are actors, they're performers, and they can concentrate on the job rather than freaking out about the fact that George Lucas happens to be talking to them. And for myself, because I'm somewhere in between being a fan and a person who works with Lucasfilm, I believe they might be a little bit reluctant to put me in there. But who knows if there's maybe a great big a letter or an email or a Twitter campaign. Who knows? Maybe I'll get a tiny role as an extra. It would be a thrill, an absolute thrill to have the tiniest little bit of a role or even just be some dude in the background who's stepping on, you know, Bantha poo or something like that. It would be really fun.
Or bumping his head walking through the door.
Sure enough, yeah, with a bunch of other stormtroopers. If I could even tell myself that that was me and know that it was actually me, if no one else recognized it, I'd still be happy for it.
You've mentioned, you know, there's this line between being a fan and being a part of the universe, but in this many years you've been doing the show, when's the last time you actually watched a Star Wars movie?
Well, it's weird that you should ask that, because there have been times where I've had to go back just for my own, I guess, my own sanity and check on some things. So it's good to actually watch them, let's say, maybe once a year. That may sound like a lot of time to put out for, say, I tend to watch all 6 films when I do that. Not necessarily back to back, but I will watch them all usually once a year just to kind of get things, I guess, refreshed in my head and realize sometimes that I start moving words around, or I start to lose the sense of the truth of a particular character. And, you know, it's hardly a chore to have to watch the Star Wars films. And because I don't do the entire film, I'm only doing a small version of it, the films, I mean, they're still kind of, in a weird way, fresh to me. There's so much that has been omitted from my version that it's still a joy to watch. Not everybody understands, you know, the whole thing about watching a film time and time again, but there's something comforting about doing it. And even though it may seem obsessive, I've been able to turn an obsessive thing into a sort of a gainful career that, you know, the boy who wanted to be an actor took his love, extreme love, perhaps, for Star Wars and somehow managed to make those two work together.
And, you know, as a fan, someone who's seen your act and someone who likes Star Wars, I think it's fair to say you've also changed the way I look at the movies. And maybe that's part of just, you know, being an adult now and you're not having the same experience you had when you're eight. But, for instance, your version of Luke, he's very whiny. He's got the feathered hair, you know, with the two suns in the background. So when you see one man Star Wars and then you watch the movies again, all of a sudden these jokes and inconsistencies start to emerge that you've maybe never thought about.
I guess so. And it's weird that you were mentioning the whole thing about Robot Chicken and Family Guy, because I've actually seen similar jokes that are in my show in Robot Chicken and in Family Guy, and even something like the Big Bang Theory, where they inform a much larger audience. And then when I sort of sometimes touch some of those same people who have seen Robot Chicken or Family Guy or whatever, you know, I'm not sure if they know if my joke is fresh or if it's based upon Family Guy or Robot Chicken, but I think we change the way we think about the films, whether we realize it or not, sort of through osmosis. I almost wonder if there weren't people that work for Robot Chicken, you know, writing or work for, you know, Seth MacFarlane, and that maybe we're all seeing these new things and coming up with these jokes at the same time, and that we're changing over the years. You know how sometimes people can come up to the same conclusion, even though they're separated by a great distance, around the same time. You know, the films existed about 30 years ago or more, and it's taken this long for some of these little jokes to sort of come to light. And when we do see it, as you say, we're getting older, and we do see it in this new light. It's just part of our growth as fans, to see things differently, to be a little bit more cynical, to see Luke for the whiny guy that he is, rather than just for the guy that we may want to grow up to be like. When I was a kid, I certainly wanted to grow up to be like Luke, and now that I'm older, I'm really glad that I didn't start my life out like Luke.
Is it too much to ask you to do a line or two as Luke, the way you do it in the show?
I could do that, but I was going into Tossie Station to pick up some power converters, because of course that's the way he actually. I think he whines even worse than that in the film. It's amazing. He spends the entire film, first film, whining. By the last film, he's not whining as much, but there's still the occasional bit of whining.
Talk about the physicality of the performance, because you mentioned before it's portable and you don't have costumes or props or anything, but it's still a very big performance. I mean, we've got the opening scroll of text. When you're doing that as a person, it's a completely different effect.
It is a different effect, but you know, the weird thing is it's the audience filling in the blanks. That's the way I see it. There's a psychology exam where, not an exam that you would take at university, but that you'd give to people, which is a bunch of lines and a couple of dots are arranged in no particular pattern on a piece of paper, just black and white, and that's what people will see. They'll see a couple lines, a couple dots on a piece of paper in no particular order. When they're then reordered into something that resembles a tiger, its stripes and a couple dots where the eye should be, people fill in the blanks and they see a tiger, even though it's still just the exact same amount of stripes and dots. And I think what I'm doing physically is that I'm kind of doing a strange impression of everything from explosions or, you know, ships or people, things like that, or as you say, the scrolling text. People can remember, I think, you know, the actual film itself, the actual item, the article, and I'm just trying to, like those dots and those lines, trying to see if I can awaken people's memory of it. And it seems bigger than what it is. It seems more authentic than what it actually is. And I think that's the power of imagination, particularly to do with seeing something like theater that you don't get with films. I mean, films tend to coddle us. They tell us when to feel something because the music's there, or the, you know, the we draw in breath because it's a beautiful scape. And we're, interestingly, having to have things seem more and more real on, like, on the big screen. We need to have 3D, you know, and we need to have so many frames per second and really authentic sound. What we're trying to do there is we're trying to make it almost like it's theater, like we're actually there seeing a film. And I'm kind of doing the equal opposite thing. I'm doing as little as I need to do to awaken the imagination, to hopefully rise up and fill in those blanks, to see that tiger, to see that film, and to really, I guess, access the power of our own imagination.
You know, you've done the Star Wars trilogy for a while, and you did Lord of the Rings, which you bring out on the road as well. There aren't too many, you know, movie series that can capture the imagination enough, as you're just mentioning, to allow crowds to come and have an already established picture of the movie. But could you do, like, the Rocky series or the Godfather movies? Is there anything else that you can see yourself doing?
Yeah, I mean, there have been many things I've looked at. It's a weird thing with franchises. Franchises don't seem to be able to stay with the perfect trilogy, the perfect three. I think Star Wars had at one point been the perfect trilogy, and, you know, now it's becoming something much bigger, and it has been something much bigger for a long time. You could say the same thing with Lord of the Rings. I would love to be able to find a story, and I still haven't found it yet. I've been looking and looking and looking, where we have a person at sort of point A, they go through all the way to what was called point B, the end, but then they also return back to the place where they came from. And when they returned, like Luke Skywalker, just perhaps coming back to Tatooine, realizing he could never truly come back, he could never go back home. Somebody's transformed, like Frodo Baggins. It's hard to find a story that's quite like that, that follows the same structure as Star Wars or Lord of the Rings. Something that takes itself seriously, but something that we can love to the point of kind of exciting that geek within us, where we almost have to pinch ourselves at times to remember that this is just a story. This is just a tale. We can love something, but it's ethereal. It's just a story. And myself, I kind of have to find something that I love so unabashedly that I need to remind myself that it is just a story. So I've actually thought maybe the Batman films might work. Hmm. I had toyed with the idea of The Matrix, but I don't feel that same way anymore.
It hasn't aged as well.
Not really, no. Sometimes a cheese just gets, you know, stinky, and other times it does a really good thing. I don't know. I guess maybe the Hobbit films might be really good come the end. They're dealing with a huge amount of information and trying to put it into one story. I guess for me, the problem really is that child who loved Star Wars, who craved it, and the person who grew up and then saw his love sort of reignited with the Lord of the Rings films, it's hard to force something like love. And I guess perhaps there's something out there that I don't quite realize it's there yet. It's still coming. Maybe it's something that I will create. But until that story comes out again, perhaps through books and into movies, that's the thing that will inform me and will, I guess, plant that seed of love that will want me to make another show that celebrates my love with other people for, you know, a new type of trilogy, a new type of story.
Okay, which brings me to the last question. You write on your website that you get this all the time, but can you imagine, you know, that you would have been doing it as long as you have, and is it still enjoyable?
Yes, it is still enjoyable. No, I did not know I would still be doing it past this point. I have to say that within about 3 months or so of me doing the show, I had people, and particularly when if I was ever doing like a little interview, even with just a local paper, they were asking me, you know, how much longer do I think I'm going to be able to do this show? I thought back then maybe 6 months if I was lucky. But when Lucasfilm came on board and they were jazzed about it, and people in the Lucasfilm world, not just the people that work for Lucasfilm, but people that love Star Wars, when they started to get behind it and sort of spread their love towards it, I've realized that there seems to be no end as long as I have the love of it to sort of drive me forward. And as long as my limbs still work, I'm quite happy to do it. And there's still so many places in the world that I've never done the show, and so many people that have no idea about what I do, and that's exciting. So I still love doing it because my drive to work is far, far different than other people's drive to work. And yeah, I guess the love only kind of grows and becomes like some kind of complex cheese or complex wine. It grows into something that's not what I expected. It's a greater appreciation for the source material.
You know, if I'm not mistaken, there was some of that Skywalker wanderlust in your voice talking about the Next Horizons. Charlie Ross will bring his one-man Star Wars show to Proctor's in Schenectady beginning January 25th for 5 shows over 3 days. And chances are better than 725-1 that you can learn more at onemanstarwars.com. Charlie Ross, what a pleasure. Thanks for all your time.
Thank you, Ian.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.